For those of you who have joined us here on the podcast before, you might notice that we no longer sound like we're in a gentleman's toilet. No, our cottaging days are behind us. We're in Theatre One. Somebody asked me about a wish list one day. I mean, I want to get back on stage, and here I am. All I have to do is throw my wants and wishes out into the universe, and it happens.
You don't put up the sticky notes in your cubicle, do you? You know, your affirmations.
Oh, God. No. Now, again, those of you who've been with us before will recognize the gentle Californian tones of Edinburgh super producer and all-round good guy, but a lawyer, Mike Blaha. Okay, that was great. Listen.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, that was so on. You only come here for the sweet chili crisp.
Yeah, and I got a margarita too out of it.
I know.
And some beers. It's all good.
I know.
But I know this man. I know Mr. McShane from forever.
So you introduced Mr. McShane.
All right, Mike McShane. Mike McShane. Mike McShane.
Sake.
He's another big Mike.
But he's internationally, globally renowned.
Yes.
Comic, improviser.
That's exactly
and actor.
Correct. Yes.
I'm the bad Mercator projection for America's improv scene.
Yeah.
And a return, totally defeated champion of Edinburgh all the time. I love it being here.
Yeah.
It's great to see Mike here. Or Michael, do you like? I really don't
Mike's
know.
No, Mike's good.
I like Mike too. He gives too many syllables, right?
Bitch.
You know,
which one of us? Him.
So, do you pop up here every year with the improv lot?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I got a privileged position. The show is popular, and we sell the grand, and then I can take whatever money I earn doing the gig and do a piece of theater and then lose it all again.
you're doing a piece of theater as
not
well?
Not this time. I'm taking the money.
Yeah.
Fuck you people.
Yeah. It is one of my many bugbears that famous people, you know, them off the telly, come to Edinburgh, take a massive, and the grand is huge,
yeah,
theatre,
yeah.
Pack it with people who should otherwise be going to proper fringe shows. What do you think?
I think we're a proper fringe show because of the history of Paul's participation in the fringe over time as a veteran of doing so many shows, getting his head kicked in plimsolls when he first came here in 79. I think I've done enough fringes and have done enough sideshows. This is my opinion only. Then done enough benefits when I'm up here, I want to be part of the scene. So I'm always willing to return it around. I'm not just taking the money and going, you know, and fucking off. I'm putting it into the food I buy here. I'm putting it into the economy. I'm seeing other people's shows. I stick my neck out and see other shows. All that benefits me because I get to see and be inspired and intimidated by people. I went and saw Robin Ince today.
Oh, yeah.
And now I was going to, like, I'm writing a show that I'm trying to pitch. And I went, oh, no, forget it. I can't even get near. I can get like a third of him in and I'm still fucked. No, no way. Then I saw Mark Thomas, who's normally a hard left comedian, doing a play, and a heavy freaking play. And acting up, I mean, positively. I'm an actor, so he's doing the good acting. I'm always of the mind that if you're funny, then you can cover a very wide base. You know, a funny guy can play Hamlet and Lear more than vice versa.
Yeah.
And so he did, Mark. He confirmed the thing I really, really admire. The play's really sharply written, staccato, hard dialogue.
Name of play?
It's called England and Son.
Oh, yeah. I'm seeing really strong reviews for that. I noted it because
and is
Son.
It's
Summer
a,
Hall.
A big cast or is it one man?
Just Mark.
Whoa.
Just Mark in this round, done in the round. Ranging, and I don't know how old he is. He's on the ground pretending he's getting his head kicked in, and he's thrashing and twisting and screaming. Putting full, you know, but not bullshit. He's not having an RS seizure on the stage, but he's like, you know. But it's like, you know, what I'm saying, he's really like, I got that from Alan Rickman.
He
was watching, we were watching something, and he goes, oh my God, he's having a fucking RS seizure.
That is wonderful.
And, but I just like that. It's great. You know, I got to do a benefit for Andy.
Yeah.
For Crisis.
Yeah.
You know, giving love to Andy Smart, who's gone now. Who, boy, oh boy, I mean, like, talk about a guy who started not at the bottom, it started and went all the way into, this much vaunted and loved position here in the Fringe. And so I think if you put your time in, you can stay there. If you dive in and you're out, and that's UK or US, if you're a US comic star and you come in, scoop it up at the Edinburgh Theater and piss off, and you don't stick around and, like, you know, get drunk or go and look at people or get inspired, then you're a rich tourist.
Yeah, I have. Well, I mean, you, Mike, we'll get to you in a second, Simon. We're all just enjoying looking at you at the moment. Oh, even me, and I know I'm not in with a chance.
No. Now, let's get me a bit drunk and we'll see, Kate.
There you go.
I wouldn't rule anything
out. So you're drinking little cola at the moment.
I know. I'm protecting my voice. No, carry on, and then I'll
Is that because you're doing the whole my body's a temple thing?
Yeah. And it's paying
off.
Yourself, you can't take your eyes off me, darling.
No, I know, I know.
No, I kind of am. Wait, finish your train of thought, otherwise I'll talk for England over here.
Oh, all right, then. Yeah. What was my train of thought?
You're talking
about... yes. So I do have, because obviously I've been coming to the Fringe, and you probably have as well, since there was scaffolding around the castle. Mm-hmm. And I just used... It was all lovely. There was no PRs. Mm. There was no big production companies. Maybe we had the Oxford Review. And the little people were the Fringe.
Right.
And you went round doing your own... I know I've said this before, you probably will. I letter-setted my first... You probably don't even know what that is.
I don't.
I letter-setted my first flowers. It was like a page of transfer as you got with letters of the alphabet on it. And you went over them with a pencil and they transferred to the page. So, oh my, this is...
Sounds like a hostage note.
Yeah, it is.
You put a finger on there as well.
But
right.
It kind of looked like that. And then I got some stick-on stars. It was a show called Chasing Rainbows.
Oh, that sounds so sweet.
It was. Campus Christmas, but there we go. And it was...
That's been outlawed in Florida, I think.
It was a... Yeah. It was a
I think a few others as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
It was Texas. A real Fringe. And then... For me, what changed it was comedy. It was going fine with theatre and prancing around and pretending to be a sunflower in the breeze and all that. And then comedy changed it, and
you're right.
Are you okay? Well, I'm triggered and traumatised myself.
Oh, no. This is a safe space, darling.
Thank you, I'm feeling better.
Get out, baby.
with the memory of, I was, the like second or third show I did, and again, we had kind of homemade A4 posters, and I was out at night with a thing of wallpaper paste, and I felt the cold, dead hand of Avalon's postering team on my shoulder, and it pretty much was, I don't think you want to put that there.
What year was that then?
I was a child. 1991.
Right. Yeah, 90s comedy, I just get the sense that it all got crazy. It's got a little, that was the first decade where stadiums and stuff was
all
comedy
of
was in
that.
Stadiums, yeah.
And it's but the thing is it's kind of never gone back.
Sure.
Because once a comedy management or indeed a comic knows that they can fill a stadium.
Yeah.
They're not going to think, well, it is a Fringe. Perhaps we ought to just do Fringe-sized... No. You go in there, it's like, let's take Edinburgh Castle.
Yeah
I think sure. They may... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I wasn't fucking there. But, it's that thing where I just get the sense that... I think I read in Stuart Lee's book that comedy became something that the public went to. It wasn't like comedy fans went to comedy shows. It's that everyone can now go to a comedy show. So like football lads could go to a comedy show. Mm-hmm.
They go and see, again, him off the telly or him with, now, what's this tickety-tockety thing I'm hearing about?
Oh, don't. Bloody TikTok. We're all a slave to that now, anyway.
But it's half the people...
Spin the spinter net, as they think that's right, isn't it, Bobby?
The interweb.
Yes.
On smartphones, yes.
Oh, yes. I have the one with the big screen, so I can see myself dying from the inside.
It all goes on the information superhighway.
Exactly.
But, people now come. No, not people. Comics come. This only happens in comedy. And it's like, Freddie, never heard of him, has never been anywhere, has never left the house. since he got out of nappies, but he's got 3 billion TikTok followers.
Yeah.
And now he's at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah. But, Kate, great thing
Please
is...
Please don't call me Kate. Call me
oh,
Copstick.
No. Is it Copstick?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Or Cop, or Bitch, cop. Or just not Kate. Okay, I feel like I'm at school.
Oh, no, fine. But what's so great is most, like the vast majority of the TikTok people who are big, they can't perform live and it's delicious. Mm. They can't do it. They can't hack it. And it's that thing, they can't, in the street, they can't talk to people and sell themselves.
No.
So you watch.
But they get audience from the followers though, don't they? So it doesn't
They don't need
care.
To do anything. Well, IRL.
It's not a good show.
Ultimately, you must. Right. Ultimately, you got to, if you're going to be a live performer in this is a live thing. Yeah. That's why you're here.
Yeah.
Unless you stay in a room with a mic, but ultimately you'll have to stand in front of people and negotiate that relationship.
Yeah.
And I hope those cats can move from that to looking at yourself and all that control, because it's almost like television control.
Yeah.
You're choosing the shots, the angles, the light, the color. And that's great. I mean, to have that skill set and be able to move it like that,
yeah.
I totally admire that. But once hot lights on you, as a shitload of people, and you got to hold them, then whatever your rhetoric contains has to have some dynamic to make it worthwhile.
Yes, having a point of view.
Oh, by the way, now this is Simon talking.
Yes.
This is Simon.
Sorry.
No, it wasn't. Introduce yourself, Simon. Come on, make yourself useful.
You want me to do my pitch? I'm Simon David. I'm doing my show, Dead Dad Show, at Edinburgh Fringe.
Did you write it?
Me and my friend, collaborator, director, Chris Lana, wrote it together. So he's a bloody genius. It's really annoying. It's like he will give me a note when we're writing. So we've been writing this for 10 months. So it's a tight hour. But he'll give me a note and it'll be like, no, that upends the whole bloody structure. And then like 2 minutes later, I'm like, oh, that's bloody genius. It's like, fuck. Unlocks everything else. So I'm like, oh, God, that's a funny joke that gets the biggest laugh a whole bloody hour. How annoying. Anyway, but yeah, so it's sort of, it's me, Chris. But then basically, so just before my dad died, about 5 months before he died, he had terminal cancer. He decided to put on a one-man show, which we have the footage of. So 5 months before he died, he did a show about how he, an hour 15 actually, a show about sort of his writing, his legacy, and that he was about to die, and what we do when we know we're just about to die. So I've got the footage of that, and I'm basically trying to use my dad's death to win the most amount of awards I can this year.
Hope very Edinburgh.
I know.
I was going to say.
Exactly.
And while also basically slagging off everyone else's work, who's ever, you know, so we do 8 sort of different genres of Dead Dad Show, sort of slagging off every kind of queer or like theatre or dramatic trope. While also being furious that my dad has done a better show than me because he actually followed through and died.
Right. It gave it the reality that you can't have unless by...
I know.
Yeah.
By topping myself on stage.
That's not fair.
But then I can't receive the awards if I end up, if I am a corpse.
But it was frustrating.
Chris could take them for you, though.
But then and people are like, oh, you need to have like a son. He can do like dead dad or whatever. And I'm like, absolutely not.
Now AI is in. You can get yourself scanned.
I have actually, I thought early on, and I might still do this, where you can get AI to obviously do anything.
Right.
So I got AI to write me a 1-star Daily Mail review for the show. And it reads fantastically. It's so funny. But you can't get AI to do anything like homophobic. I really want them to like be a bit, can't get AI to like hate speech or anything. Because it's just not allowed.
There's no such thing as gay eye?
Gay eye. Hey! Oh, God, we're on tonight.
Yeah.
But gay eye.
I will give money to that project.
Yeah. Well, let's co-invest and start an app. But yes.
That's great.
Anyway, no. Anyway, so it's a big... we're really thrilled. So, yeah, it's honestly... Well, the thing is, I've thought about the show now in thirds, really. So it's like, third of it is obviously me writing and performing it. And then a third is Chris writing and directing it. But also a third is having a dad who would do that. Would sort of, because actually Chris then helped co-write my dad's show and gave him some pointers. And it's kind of hysterical because we're in the space at Surgeon's Hall right now recording this. And just like the next room across is where I did... a show called Virgin, which I mentioned in the show, that was here.
Oh, that was real?
Yeah. So I did a show, so 5 years ago I did a show called Virgin, new pop music from an unpop cherry. 2 stars, Fest magazine. And, and then my dad came to that and saw that sort of 3 times while he was already ill.
Right.
And then Chris met my dad there, and then that sort of then meant that Chris and my dad sort of put on their show, his show. And then sort of coming back to the festival like 5 years later to then sort of to have my dad on screen and meeting people. It's a little bit too meta and a little bit too sort of bonkers for me to kind of like process or like take in right now. Like, people are like, oh my, you're
don't process, just love
it. No, exactly. I think, like, people are like, oh God, what an emotional roller coaster, you must be a wreck. I'm like, I've sort of switched off the actual, like, that's my father, man, what does it mean, all that sort of thing. You just switched off because I've got to just do a quite technical show and sell it as well.
It is stunning.
It's such a thrill.
I mean, it's frustrating for me because originally I went along because I thought, the Dead Dad show, some, you know, 18-year-old twat trying to be meta and hopefully failing miserably and ha, 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 ha. I go along.
You're not that cynical, are you?
I am that embittered, yes.
No, I'm that cynical,
goes on.
Yeah. I hate everyone.
And I kind of, at the back of my mind was that it better be fucking good if someone's going to basically piss on a lot of really very good comics who've done Dead Dad shows. And okay, now it's become a trope.
Yeah.
But just because you're 12 and you're coming to the Fringe for the first time, you don't get to laugh at it. So then I arrive, and I'm thinking, oh. And then he starts. And from, I haven't been to many shows, comedy shows, that start from the word go. You're just like, oh, okay, sorry, this is brilliant. Nice. Because mostly someone who's really not good at communicating with other human beings is trying to do some audience work. Uh-huh. And, it, you know, it's kind of not happening because, you know, as you were saying, lots of people are there who've just come to see him off the telly, can't afford it, and have come to see him who's not yet on the telly but is a bit hopeful. And they're not a massively cooperative audience to do participation stuff with. And also at the back of my mind was, for the first time, my dad died in April.
Yeah.
And he was fucking everything in my life. And I thought, maybe I can get triggered and, you know, and complain. You know,
rage. Yes. Yeah. Slag it off. Yeah, great.
I would be the one suddenly to be sobbing at the back. None of that. It's a genius. It's a wonderful piece. We get, I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but you get, everyone's talking about.
I do. Basically, it's really fun because I get to.
It's the best parody.
Well, I get to slag off. Okay, we're in a really interesting moment when, so being gay, it's not only okay to be gay, it's
like
celebrated. It's like a superpower. Gay is amazing. Brands want gay. They are desperate to be in Pride parades. They're desperate to slap a rainbow flag on anything of their products, right?
Right.
So we're in an unhinged moment in history where the past sort of 5 to 8 years, everything is now, there's TV shows about gay, and it's all gay. It's all, everyone's very excited, but being gay, you're not saying anything interesting or new or exciting or insightful by just having a show where it's gay people in it. And this is what people forget. They just go, oh my God, get gay. Oh, I'm gay. I'll watch the gay show. But it's like, but if you have any brain cells knocking around, you go, okay, gay, fine. But what are you saying? What's the point?
What is it?
So that's it. So basically, I do a whole. So I do basically Simon, you know, the sort of crazy version of myself who's sort of desperate to win all the awards. Mm-hmm. He comes on and he does a whole musical about he's a boy, but he's wearing a skirt. Yeah, pretty groundbreaking stuff.
Everyone's talking about Simon.
Everyone's talking about Simon, which is not a parody of any Western musical by.
No, not at all.
Not at all. No, and it'd be libelous to assume, you know, to say it was. So, the thing is, because I went to drama school, and that's the thing, I was kind of immersed in that, everyone loving musicals. And that thing, musical people, musical theatre people love it.
Everyone's gay in musical theatre.
Everyone's gay in musical theatre, and also, pretty much, and also. They love musicals, but it's like, they love all musicals. Mm-hmm. And it's mind-numbing, because it's like, no, you're putting Sondheim at the same level as, like, fucking, I don't know, some Disney shite. And it's like, but you can't, and it's that thing, it's very similar with gay. It's like, oh, it's gay, I love it, I'm gay, that's gay, so I love it, because we're both a gay thing. And people who love musicals are, I do musicals, that's a musical. And you see people just go, oh, it's a musical, so I like this. And it's like, what are you fucking talking about? Get some taste, get some insight, get some fucking, like, just try it. Oh, anyway, engage some brain
you
cells.
You do go very dark with a, again, completely original idea, dramatic idea, which I think would be marvellous as a film sometime, even if it was cast as with non-gay people. The normal hole.
Yeah, I do then an 80s AIDS play.
God. Oh, I love it.
The normal hole, yeah.
Heart.
The normal hole. It's about a boy who goes to New York City and he takes 800 or 900,000 dicks in one night. And then
his,
I won't spoil it, but then I'd hate to spoil it, but basically, yeah, there's a situation in a dark room that sort of changes his life forever, and his family, and his dad, of course.
Right. Mm.
So yeah, that's a big moment as well.
Because I would love to see a film of that.
Oh, what I will say is right. Okay, it's quite funny because it's so nice because I feel like I've done my time. I've seen a lot of stuff. I've seen a lot of fringe shows, sort of, you know, good shows and bad shows. Mm. But then
good shows
seen,
and good bad shows.
Oh my dear, I'm still here. A whole new world. Yeah, it's the same. Amazing. But yeah, so it's just nice to be able to, like, I'm slagging off some things, but also it's nice to, you know, I'm not slagging off the normal hole. It's a vital piece of work. I'm not slagging off, like, I don't know, The Inheritance or anything. Right. But it's just, it's sort of kind of trope that this kind of really over-sexualized, sort of muscular, New York-based cis gay man, like, fucking each other.
Yeah, yeah, like Cruising gone bad.
Yeah, exactly. Cruising, yeah. Boys gone cruising.
Now, can I just stop you right there?
Please,
because
do.
You said the magic word.
Mm.
Fucking.
Yes.
Now, I have here beside...
I'm sorry, is a duck going to drop from the ceiling? And you said the magic word, fucking. Hi, yeah. It's Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
Whether you fucked your life.
We have here, I know it may not seem it, but we have here...
A toy boy.
The world's oldest twink,
yes.
Michael Blaha.
That's right.
Aging twink.
I'm old, but I'm not that old.
Okay.
Unless you would really like to be my toy boy.
I would love to be your toy boy. Are you kidding?
That is a scoop right
there.
Yeah,
I know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, scoop and a half, doll.
As well as a sharabang of other marvelous productions, which he told us about the last time he was on the podcast, so we might do it again.
Well, in between.
Mike Blaha, Fringe Management, has also yet again brought to the Fringe, but despite popular demand, a certain professor who last year gave us, I don't know how many extra words for wanking.
Spank the monkey.
Spank the monkey was the show. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know.
Stroke the banana.
It's
yeah.
So,
okay.
That was in there.
So sad. I'm sad for you if you missed it. This year. Now, am I talking to Mike or am I talking?
No, let's stay with Mike.
Let's stay with Mike.
I can do Professor Farnley.
Because the professor is.
Is that you in that wig?
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah, Shagadelic.
Yes!
Oh wow, cool.
Dude, I saw that one. I go, that guy looks like. Was he in Spirit or some band from like Wigan? What the fuck is that?
I gotta say, that is the best. I mean, it was photoshopped. It's not an actual wig. The designer photoshopped the wig. It's me.
You nicely done, man.
Good God, people are sacrificing for their art, and you won't even put on a fucking wig.
No,
I
couldn't be arsed.
I get my knob out in my show.
Exactly.
Yeah, come on.
Very nice, right. By the way.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much. Right. I kind of say, we did this show at Vault Festival in January, and it's sort of a Vault Festival like underneath Waterloo Station.
Right.
So it's like cold tunnels.
A lot of trade going through there.
A lot of trade, but also cold. Copstick, cold.
Oh, no.
My brother came to that show and said, my knob looked like a fucking, what's it called, an acorn.
Oh, wow.
I know.
You don't do any demonstrations in the show?
No, not really, no. I do in and out.
Do a late night version.
Yeah, the old now.
Out of the gaze.
Yeah, well, there's
oh, did you have,
everyone's talking about Mikey.
it's fucking only, not wanking.
That's right. Wanking was last year.
Yeah. Wanking is so last year.
What are you talking about? You're doing a show.
It's called Shagadelic.
Shagadelic.
The origins of slang words for doing it.
Right.
So last year was the etymology of onanistic euphemisms. The euphemisms for
drag. Don't use big words.
He's a twink. I want a favorite that's Irish. It's called Shaking Hands with the Underemployed.
Yes, that's in the show. That's last year. I was in it last year. It's a good one. Because it's a brilliant one. And so... Yeah, so this year it's Shagadelic, and it's about slang words for screwing, and shag being obviously one of them.
What's your favorite?
Oh, God, there's so
many.
And
you can't give too much away, or people won't bother coming to see the show.
No, that's true.
Can I ask about ones that I sort of newer in the gay community? Okay, so do you know what Grindr is?
Of course.
So getting bread.
Nope.
Straight people breeding it. Breeding to make
children. B-R-E-D, not getting bread. Like for a sandwich.
Like getting bread. No.
Shopping at Tesco.
Bread.
All right.
Down the
A for anal.
A for, what do you mean?
In bread.
Oh, yes, true.
Oh, fair enough.
B for blowjob. Anyway, we could do this all night.
Oh, it's a single list of the apps.
No. Right. Anyway. So straight people, they breed. So getting bread. Like gay men, like, I want you to breed me.
Okay.
As in like,
is that a bottom being bred?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Got it. Bread. Right. Getting rails.
I know the lingo.
Getting rails.
Just forcefully. Very.
Well. Kind of. Maybe. Brutal and.
Yeah. There's a little bit of that. Yeah. I talk about getting nailed, which.
Nailed.
Yeah.
It's more American, I think.
Yeah.
It is. You say it's American, except that nailing actually comes from British sailors in Tahiti in the 1700s, who would exchange nails for sexual services with the prostitutes in Tahiti because they didn't have metal on the island. So it was a way for the sex workers to acquire metal resources for the island. Mm-hmm. And then the captains of the ships had to stop it because the ships were falling apart.
So the ships had holes in them.
Yes, exactly.
Could not try big enough for the sailers.
I know.
So that's the kind of, that's what the show is about.
Please
the
tell
origin.
Me you put Mr. Happy Hides His Helmet in.
No. Is that one that you gave me?
And that's one that I gave you.
Come again. It's going to be in tomorrow.
Mr. Happy Hides His Helmet. I think
Mr. Happy Hides His Helmet. That's too many H's. That's H heavy.
You can't have too many H's.
Too many H's.
Mike, do you have any? Canadian?
American.
Are you American?
Yeah.
I thought you were Canadian.
I'm kind of a mix because my mother was Ojibwe from a reservation in Canada. I'm adopted, so.
He has a Canadian passport, so
my father, because this is family ancestry. Yeah, my dad's Scottish.
Whoa.
Yeah.
McShane.
Yeah.
Of course.
But that's what's my adopted name. Huh. My name was David Lewis for 3 weeks, and then I got changed to Michael David McShane.
Oh, okay.
You're becoming more interesting about the second.
we'll keep drinking that beer.
I just thought you was a funny bloke off the telly. That's basically why you're here.
I don't know. I like stupping because of the Yiddish concept.
Yeah. Stupping is in that.
I love it. Stupping. So. I like, there was one movie where Bruce Smith goes, "Say, you got to take the 9:15 hot dog to Tuna Town."
That's in the show.
Or something like that. It's just so.
There's a phrase, to take the banana boat to Tuna Town.
That's it.
I like the story, but who was the astronaut, the second man on the moon. Buzz Aldrin lived to a ripe old age and would tour the world telling stories about walking on the moon. Right. And it, more often than not, it would be in universities. There'd be a lot of university students, and he would end up in the room with several of the university students, and people referred to it one stoop at a time.
Well, my dad used to say that one of the things about having sex and then getting involved with somebody you don't want to be involved with, or getting married because he was born in 1910, his idea of the morality of it. He goes, "Boy, watch out, because that's the fucking you get for the fucking you get." I think that can go outside of heterosexual boundaries. It's like you're stuck with some guy going, "Oh, dude, I got to balance."
Yeah, no, I think
it was good. It was good for him.
Stupping is in the show because. Have you heard of coitus interruptus?
Have you heard of it?
She's lived it.
Exactly.
Substantial interest penalty for early withdrawal. The opposite of that is...
Has anyone walked off this podcast before? Jesus.
No, I picked my guess very carefully.
Then there's coitus conservatus, which is a German origin, which is a prolonged copulation using tantric mind control.
Oh my God! Oh, but like Yoko Ono and what? Oh no, was it Sting?
But it's now known under its modern German Nicht Stopping Stupping. So it's in there. But yeah, so I'm having a good time.
Okay. Usually, and I can't think of any right at the moment. You, Stephen, you might. Scotland is a, I think, I don't know, Scotland's a great mine of slang for, because I remember when you were doing...
Spank the Monkey,
one of my favourite, because it was the name of a show I was in at one point, Choking the Gaffer.
Yeah, that was in there.
Oh, choking, horrible. Yeah. Horrible, lovely.
Now you see, exactly.
Very visceral image.
Yes. When you were saying horrible there, you were smiling.
Yes, as listeners, I was celebrating.
Hello, I think we're finding out more and more and more about Simon.
Yes, yes.
Well, I love chugging, too. That was that was a good one, because remember last year in the show we talked about Mountain Dew didn't have their cultural touch points in order, so they did a commercial in Scotland called The Chug Life. It's like talking about chugging Mountain Dew, and it didn't end well for them.
What's your sorry.
I'd like to know if any other countries in the world refer to getting pumped or pumping, which is very Scottish. But
yes, that's in the show.
And of course
rumpy pumpy, but that's, you know.
That's a bit, and then, quite cool. Oh, it's quite old-fashioned now, isn't it? I got my hole.
No, didn't know that one.
Hole's quite a big one in the gay community.
So to get your hole.
To get your hole is to have... I was out last night. I got my hole.
That's Scottish? I'll use it. Because I looked up Scottish, you know, slang. I wanted to find...
And women would use it as well. I'm
going
to get my hole.
Okay, I'll do it.
Not even like get my hole filled.
Just get
my hole. Get my hole.
So have you ever heard of Hock Gamandi?
No. Hockmahandy.
Hockmahandy. Nobody fucking... It's in the OED as a Scottish word for sexual intercourse.
No, Hockmahandy.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. But no, you're the first person that has acknowledged that word actually exists.
I suppose it's a very...
Very archaic,
Not so much very archaic.
Not you. No, it's because
Whose podcast is this?
No, archaic in the good sense of being...
No, Hockmahandy, yes, it is very old-fashioned.
That's what I meant.
But you have to say it properly.
Instead of archaic.
Hockmahandy.
Hockmahandy.
That's it. Good. Well done.
There you go.
But it was in the show until
Any octogenarians in your office will be falling off their chairs.
There were
laughter.
Octogenarians in the audience today, and they came up to me after and were freaking lovely. And
excellent.
Said it was wonderfully most fun we've had, and blah, blah, blah. Because they were drunk on our ass.
That puts me in mind of Estonia.
Yeah.
A what?
Estonia.
Oh, Estonia Uppie. Yeah.
Usually up close or a ginnel.
Yep. Estonia Uppie. Standing up.
God damn it. All right.
Estonia Uppie.
So, Mike, you're just sort of a pervert. That's the
idea. Yeah, well, I'm not sort of a pervert.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He unleashes.
You're a professional perv.
Yeah. Yeah. He unleashes his inner pervert across the Edinburgh Fringe.
We're all doing that.
Thing is, actually, you know where you've got to go next year?
What's that?
You've got to go anal next year.
Oh, yeah.
That's in the show, too.
Because you've had... you've had wanking, you've had just having sex, so you got to go anal.
Well, I think maybe like even more left field, like maybe sex with animals or dead bodies or like murder or something.
That's sort of,
there's only really a couple of words for each.
That's
kind of
middle of the road to me. So
sorry. Yeah, bestiality, yes, it's a bit tame.
No, that's in the show too.
But quite honestly, what impresses me year on year,
I
think, and that you see,
being rude.
All this saucy talk made it necessary for Mike McShane to leave us for a short while, and then come back, adjusting his trousers in the groinal area.
I'm sorry, it made me furtive and a bit. So I was a bit stimulated. So I went in. I was like, I was chafing the bishop in the back room, and now I'm.
That was in the show.
Dried off. Yes.
Or flogging the bishop was also bishop. Part of it.
I love the word furtive.
Spreading my caustic paste across the bedroom.
Sowing the seeds, yes. Yeah, flogging the children.
What I think not enough people understand when they see Mike's shows is. Is the amount of research that goes into them. I mean, he has to spend days, weeks online, and watching movies, watching clips, just in case somebody comes up, if you'll pardon the expression, with a new expression that he hasn't got in the show. It's, I mean, I've met him, you know, pre-production, and sometimes he just looks exhausted. He looks drained.
Buy every single record that Elton John ever made. He's the completest in a different way.
I try, but I've got AI integrated. I didn't know that AI was going to be a big theme this year. I guess I should have considered that it might have been, but when I wrote the show, I wasn't thinking about,
Tom Cruise, the Mission Impossible that just came out, that's the big villain or the big, you know, thing, is AI.
Terrible movie, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not going to see that. But, yeah.
Well, and they
made AI, so it was like, but they had to, like, they were shooting during COVID, so it was about 4 years.
Around.
So they kind of did catch up with the
Harrison Ford in the new Raiders,
but still kind of
much younger.
It's
the basis of the strikes, as you know.
How do we all feel about AI?
The DA.
You feel threatened?
Not particularly, because I'm not a big enough celebrity that would cut into my income. I do think it's, I like, the AI movie making, where you have that Mandelbrot effect. First, it's the fingers are a little wobbly and they're eating pizza, and then the pizza becomes huge and it's over their face and their fingers are moving into the pizza, and it gets multiple hand. So it has a terrifying dreamlike wobble to it. That, of course, if I've smoked a big joint, I'm kicking back going, this is fucking great. And I know it's still a movie. So I know it's still an artificially created story with the potential of jamming these images so fast. That I appreciate that. It makes me laugh, slightly terrifies me, because it gets deep enough in its movement that the human animal goes, and so it's a little thrilling, but I don't think that's, I prefer that. I'd watch that for a little bit, but to recreate an entire film or to create a process of writing wholly from a computer might show what one thing we do well is like rethinking shit and going, no, not this.
Yeah. I think someone says something really interesting, I can't remember who, but they said that AI, they could, because the writing's really quite eerily convincing. Like, when
do
I
you
just,
think so?
Yes. Yeah.
But eerily is the right word. It's a little off.
It's a little off. It's a little off.
It's a little, and also, it has no character. The thing about great writers, and even good writers, is you can hear their voice.
There's an originality,
You can hear their voice in what they write.
Well, good writing, everything is slightly off-kilter. It's not perfect.
But it's personality.
It's point of view. But then someone was saying that, it was Simon Pegg, I think, when promoting the Mission Impossible film about AI. He was saying that AI could be used to write, like, you know, your three-star films or whatever, films that people would probably watch. But it would mean that a next generation of writers who need to write things and they'd be bad and then be, AI be using to like redraft stuff or whatever. Those writers who were starting out and working up, they wouldn't be able to have those opportunities to redraft and
make
learn
mistakes.
And make mistakes and write bad scripts and write better scripts and then write really terrific scripts.
And
so,
I'm not going to say which.
Oh, we're about to slag someone off.
Because I said, I've just said, listen to what I'm, watch my lips.
Right.
I'm not going to say which.
Okay.
But I've read three reviews. Reviews. Hmm. Which I pretty much know were written by AI.
Really?
In this,
really?
This
yes. festival?
There is AI detection
yes.
software.
It's the slippery slope.
Yes.
It is, and you know, a couple of years down the line, it is absolutely possible, it may well even exist now, that you can program AI to improvise with another AI machine. Mm.
Yes, and?
Yeah.
You know, yes. and
to exchange information between two sets of data and come up with something that's compiled in a way? I would
it's
dig
not
that.
New. I don't know, but that's the thing. Is like, I was really worried coming to Edinburgh this year. I did a show last year and the new one this year. And like this year I arrived and there was like a third less amount of print and posters out. Like, production companies I spoke to, I'm just self-producing, but production companies I spoke to, they were like, last year they took 21 acts, this year it's 9 acts. So it's like the big old shift down. So when I was thinking like pre coming up to Edinburgh, I was thinking, oh God, is it still going to be a thing? Are audiences still going to like go up to Edinburgh to see shows? You know, it's not like mad rush as last year. And it's that thing that, yes, they are. There's lots of people here. I skate around and I hand flyers out. And like now in sort of week 2 or 3, it's like I can't really skate as easily as one because there's so many people there, which is great. So I just think that, I don't know, I just think that every time that new technology is sort of talked about or brought in, like TikTok, for example, oh, is TikTok going to kill live comedy or is AI going to stop writing and, you know, improvisers or new plays or new work? I just think you just can't beat a human being with a microphone in a room. You just can't beat it. So complex. So you can do how many hundreds of faces or whatever muscles there are on your face and you can attack. Or there's just an infinite sort of human imagination.
I agree, but we've now got a generation. Hate them.
Gen Z, hate millennials and Gen Z.
Sorry, who was that speaking? Not me.
Satanistic.
We've got generation who are growing up and that's what they know, that's what they're growing up.
Nah, I don't agree with that.
No?
I don't. I think that...
Tell me I'm wrong.
We're laughing at it. We're laughing at AI. We're using AI, it's like, you know,
online, yeah. And you're laughing at AI.
Yeah. Because online, that's two different things.
Let's see the irony.
Well, but you can go and see a show, and it could be a West End musical or a comedy show, and you can be online and be on Instagram. You can be. It's just a forum. It's just a platform to then to use it however you want. So you can laugh at like people like can make stuff on AI that looks shit. Like there's a rapper called Megan Thee Stallion, right? Who is in a trial right now because she got shot, and men are being awful about it. What a surprise!
Oh, dear.
What a surprise! Anyway, so AI, they actually, it's interesting what you just said. A newspaper article, they AI'd a photo of the courtroom, right? And the AI putting in someone who shot, and then Megan Thee Stallion put two guys and then a fucking horse in the photo that they use, yeah. And they fucking published because then it goes straight to Twitter and they put it on Twitter or on X, Elon Musk's X, fucking moron. Anyway, so it's that thing of like we're then laughing AI going, well, look, it's, you know, it doesn't all fucking work. So it's, and then also we're using AI, for example, I was going to write a 2-star Daily Mail review using AI, thinking how creepy is that? So I just think that we're not, and also I will say, not to be a bitch, but like boomers on Facebook, they believe far more misinformation and they vote far, I mean, Brexit misinformation and you've got vaccine misinformation, fucking Trump, QAnon, you know, storming the Capitol. Boomers on Facebook, you know, they're the ones who are like misreading things and misunderstanding things and, you know, conspiracy theorists.
Well, I read that in the January 6th Freedom
Parade. Yeah, exactly. Let's get you to your bath.
Ow. And, yeah. You know, they're smearing feces on the wall of the government.
Yeah.
I used to do that as a child.
Of course you did, Granddad. Yeah.
I remember when things were run by small, leathery winged animals named Bob.
Oh, that's nice.
Thank you.
Let's dig your shallow grave.
Oh my God.
So you know what I mean. So I just think that so that's the thing. I think the generation we are using AI and much more like adept to it and know what it can do and the limitations.
Is that not a bit like going, I can have the occasional jab. I'm not going to get addicted. I'm just, oh gosh, where's the syringe?
I don't know.
You're going to say no.
I don't know.
Information is a drug is as old as William S. Burroughs. Mm. And I think we're better than that.
But I don't think that AI is not... But AI is just a tool, though. That's the thing. It's a tool.
It's not your tool.
No, but you can use ChatGPT to make what you want.
You can't control it.
In what sense? It's like
it is your tool. Yeah. And you can use it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you can't control it.
But it's, can you control a hammer?
Yes. Yes. Right.
You know, well, I tell ChatGPT to write, for example. Oh, so I was doing a promo video for one of my previews.
I have an app. We should try it.
Oh yeah, you could do that.
You have it yet?
Oh, you could write. Get it to write a bad review from Kate Copstick about something. Oh, about Dead Dad Show. Right.
Now put that would.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's really fun. You'll get addicted to this. It's really fun. So put in to ChatGPT.
Okay,
Kate
here we go.
Kate
Copstick. He's old. His fingers don't work.
No, they do. So Kate Copstick. Write a bad review of Simon David Dead Dad Show.
In the style of?
Yeah, in the style of Kate Copstick for The Scotsman. Yeah.
It can do that.
You will be shocked. And then, Mike, you read it out, and you have to just sit there and listen. It's mind-blowing.
It's funny, when you say that, it sounds like an improv suggestion.
Well, exactly.
But what's so funny,
that's kind of what it is.
It is,
except
that,
there's an improv suggestion to a computer.
But it will sound off because it's not a human being.
Yeah.
But in the next few years, it might get
okay,
better.
Okay, let's do this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have...
Ooh, I love this sort of thing. Oh.
While we're waiting...
Oh, one sec. Can I tell you what I did? So, for one of my previews to promote it, I got ChatGPT to write me a promo of my show. And it became this whole horrible thing where Dead Dad Show was then retitled My Dad Was Gay, A Comedy Eulogy.
Ah.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I'm sorry, but I cannot comply with that request.
Really?
Yeah, maybe because it said bad or dead. I don't know.
Write a bad review of Dead Dad Show in the...
If you put Dead Dad
Deer
to
show, I don't know. Go ahead, take a shot.
I'm unchat GBTable or whatever. It is.
No, no, you will get you.
Not GBT.
GPT.
GPT. Oh, yeah, I get it wrong.
What I think I would love to hear is a bad review of Dead Dad Show in the style of Kate Copstick by Mike McShane.
You do that, and I'll try and get this to work.
I have standards, and they've been poorly met by this show. This flagrant disregard of the natural relationship between a man and son is exploited for the needs of making a man who looks like Father Runaways from the St. Benedict's Jogging Academy into a rock star.
I'm not listening. I'm doing this. So
good.
Say whatever you want.
I don't think I can say anything to insult you. You're a tough cookie, man.
Oh, thanks, Don.
But in this case, I decided to slash my own wrist, but no, I wanted to live long enough so I could have my soul be crushed by this utterly uninteresting show. After this, I'm going to crawl up Stuart Lee's ass and start a small fire.
I'll join you.
And to see if we can get the scowling smoke to come out of his mouth. That's me, Kate Copstick. I'll be at Greyford Cemetery smacking people off of the slabs.
Okay, it's writing on here.
All right, cool.
It's writing on here.
But I think I might do it. I've just made it do the review, and then I'll try and get it in the style of The Scotsman. It might be too specific to ask it for. I'm so sorry for your name. I'm so sorry.
It can't match me.
I can't. You've beaten the tech, darling.
They broke the
I'm uncommuterizable. Computerizable. What does it say?
I'll make it a 2-star review in a minute. This is a 4-star, which we don't need.
No, you don't need them. You've got 100.
Oh, darling.
So, do you use chat?
Some people use it for like cover letters.
I use it for entertainment value so far.
Uh-huh.
There is a famous case in the United States where a lawyer used it to write a brief for a court case, and it was completely wrong, citing the cases wrongly, and this guy got sanctioned by the judge, properly so, I might add, because he didn't read the fucking brief. You read a brief by an associate, why wouldn't you read a brief by AI, for fuck's sake? And he got sanctioned by the judge for filing a brief that had been created by AI. So I've not used it in my legal side, I've not used it creatively. It's in the show as a joke that my research assistant used AI. And so some of the stuff in the show is purposefully ridiculous.
Oh, so what, if you ask AI, I'm not asking you to do huge amounts of the show because we have to go and see it. What does AI come up with if you ask it about words for shagging?
Well, it's not as straightforward as that. It's just little snippets of it. So, for example, the word score means to get laid. And it has done since the 1800s. And so I say, according to ChatGPT, that is what Abraham Lincoln meant when he said 47 years ago. It actually meant he hadn't been laid more than 4 times in the last 7 years. So it's purposefully ridiculous stuff like that that I attribute to the AI chatbot. So
nice.
Yeah, but I don't. I hadn't straight out asked either in real time or in the show. I never said ChatGPT. I give me some GPT rather give me some slang for sexual intercourse because. It would just give me a list, and I you can get the list on the website.
There's thousands. Image of President Lincoln and first thing going, so if I don't see this play, Mary, you'll go down on me tonight? I will. All the way to the sack.
I'm going to make this a two-star review, but do you want me to object to something in the production, like specifically? So like, the use of a banana
it's
was
gay.
Not.
It's gay.
No, it can't do hate speech.
Yeah, it'll say, sorry, I can't help you.
So
you mean I can't hate you because you're gay?
I'm afraid. Well, you can in this room, but ChatGPT won't allow it.
It's oh, wrong. Okay.
ChatGPT is very well.
Derivative.
That we'll say that already. So something. If you just we just make up something that wasn't in the show, that you just say like, so there was a banana in the show.
Oh, nudity.
Well, that was in the show.
Yes, I know.
Anyway, all right.
And well, I loved every second of it.
Acapella singing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, it started. All right, I'll read it out. This is a two-star review of my show.
Yep.
On ChatGPT. Title: A Disjointed Exploration of Grief. Simon David's Dead Dad Show. 2 stars. Simon David's Dead Dad Show, presented at the Edinburgh Fringe, the promise of a poignant and emotionally charged performance falls short as the production struggles to find its footing. While there are moments of genuine emotion and vulnerability, the overall execution leaves much to be desired. From the outset, it becomes clear that the show's narrative lacks cohesiveness. David's storytelling, although heartfelt at times, often veers off into tangents that distract from the central theme of grief and the relationship with his late father. The lack of a clear structure or through line makes it difficult for the audience to fully engage with the narrative. It's just making up.
How the
see
fuck
it.
Did it get on?
Yeah, absolutely. But it hasn't taken into account that you are in the comedy section.
Well, another downfall of Dead Dad Show lies in David's delivery. While the intention may be to convey raw authenticity, the performance often feels stilted, with moments that miss the mark in terms of emotional impact. The uneven pacing further adds to the disjointed nature of the show, resulting in moments of disconnect and a loss of engagement. Additionally, the incorporation of multimedia elements, such as projection and music, feels underutilized and at times unnecessary. Rather than enhancing the overall experience, these elements come across as a superficial additions that fail to add depth or enhance the storytelling. The lack of integration makes it difficult for the audience to fully immerse themselves in the performance. It is important to note that while Dead Dad Show attempts to evoke powerful emotions, it falls short in execution. It does kind of go on a little bit like rounded circles. Here's the last bit. In conclusion, Simon David's Dead Dad Show presents an admirable exploration of grief, but unfortunately fails to deliver on its potential. And then with a disjointed narrative, we see heard that already, underutilized, it just kind of goes around. While there are glimpses of genuine emotion, they are overshadowed by the overall shortcomings of the show.
Well, wait, how the fuck did it... No, I know you're reading it, but how did it come up with... It hasn't seen your show, as far as I know.
It's seen all the reviews of any show ever.
That's what I'm thinking. So that's from a show 10 years ago that you had.
No, that's...
Maybe
no,
last
that's
year.
That's tiny, tiny bits of all reviews ever.
Not Simon's show, just any show.
All theatre reviews.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But how is it?
And the technique of petting you and slapping you.
Clauses, the way.
So it's a generic 2-star review that's been applied to Dead Dad.
And the other
thing,
you
say Dead Dad show.
The other thing that it doesn't know is
that's wild, man.
A 2-star review gets you 100 words in Scotland.
Yeah,
that's one of the things, and pretty much.
It's like having a super bitchy Michael Coveney on speed.
You
thing.
Could have said in 100 words and it would give you 100 words.
Yeah.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Oh, so the
you could say
you're saying you've seen some that are like that.
Yeah.
So you can tell.
You can do whatever you want. I could say add that he makes out with a monkey in it, and they'll do that. The monkey section was derivative. Blah, blah, blah. It'll just incorporate in.
I can guarantee you the monkey part would not have been derivative.
Oh, there you go.
It's amazing how much it costs to rent a monkey.
Yeah, I mean, really, coming from Spank the Monkey.
It's kind of bonkers. It's kind of, that's the thing. We don't really know.
But
we don't really know
the other thing is that an awful lot of people don't, I just don't
distinguish.
Think that they think that the profession is off again.
I'm off again.
Up again.
I'm sorry. It's the way you start talking about shit.
I know.
Yeah. I'm like
wrong.
I feel
how,
like my.
How derivative. Yeah.
Stop
was.
It! Stop it!
It was so unreal.
Trousers back on.
Simon. Simon really
sorry.
Did not.
Somebody
go
sit on a pencil.
It was 2 stars. But I certainly now, when we're in a kind of transitional period, I don't think most people believe it kind of in their wildest imaginings that somebody writing reviews in a decent publication would do that. I think they might if it's, I don't know much about art, but I know what I like.com.
In the same way as journalists wouldn't tap your phone.
Yeah.
I think that people use AI for cover letters. So they'll put a job listing online into AI and they'll go, write me a CV and cover letter which suits this.
Yeah.
And then they'll ChatGPT will make it and then they'll just edit it.
I mean, I've
they'll
had...
edit it at least. Yeah, this fucking lawyer didn't even read his brief.
Employers are using ChatGPT to write the advert in the first place.
Of course they are.
It's hysterical. And then so ChatGPT is essentially now talking to itself.
Yeah.
And ChatGPT, as you type things into ChatGPT, even you by doing that, it's learning
it's
from
learning,
that.
It's learning
what
you
and learning what, learning what people actually want from the
program. I have a client who has a production company and he had his employee handbook written by AI. I mean, he had to revise it, obviously, but he made the main...
Yeah,
because it just, like you said, it just took all the possible and put it into an employee handbook.
So in a few years, I don't know how many...
Two.
Fine. I'll 18 take that.
Months.
Yeah. The Edinburgh Fringe will be virtual, completely virtual, and written by chat.
GPT.
I
asked ChatGPT to write me a 10-minute stand-up comedy. Routine, and it was pretty funny. It was pretty
really?
funny, but delivered by the right person, it's funny, but the wrong person, absolutely dire. So yeah, but.
But how long before we don't care?
Well, if you laugh, why would you care?
No, I don't agree with that either. I think that I did one, again, I used ChatGPT to write a little promo for my show as a joke, saying, oh, look, this is ChatGPT. And it said, you know, it was like, oh, my dad was gay, a comedy eulogy, coming to a theatre near you. Right, I was like, right, I write a ChatGPT of a gay comedy show about a dad. Yeah. I was like, coming to a theatre near you, my dad's dead, a comedy eulogy. It's about my dad's crazy adventures and about how he'd always try on my mum's clothes. So his dad, his ghost might be haunting me in the audience. Just don't tell my mom. Just really bizarre, like kind of comedy
weird
phrases that don't make any sense. It's kind of bonkers.
One thing which is wonderful, especially about comedy, and especially about comedy that has a lot of the performer in it, is the kind of fallibility. I mean, nobody ever in an audience laughs more than when something goes wrong, something drops off. When
you're in the room and it's magic. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's hard to make an artificial tightrope.
Yeah.
It really is, you know.
I mean,
if you know it. You know.
Completely. Yeah. And, you know, when did the whole improv thing really... It was with the comedy in this country, in the UK. It was with the Comedy Store, wasn't it?
Yes, you could say that because that coincided within a time of Whose Line being produced. But you had Ken Campbell and Roddy Maud Roxby and The People Machine. And so those experiments in the sort of like happening style stuff of improv, which were here, were and even like John Ratzenberger and George Wendt taught improv in the 70s here as students. They taught like Pierce Brosnan.
Whoa.
It was amazing. Supposedly, Jim Sweeney took a workshop, and Steve Steen, and Pierce Brosnan was in it, and they went, no, he was fucking hilarious.
Whoa.
You know, mad Irish dude, right? Yeah. You know.
Have you seen the film he did? He was really funny. Where he played
the Matador.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
He was really
funny. I'd kill to be in a comedy with him. I would just be losing it.
I just saw somebody posted. You know Stephen Alan Green.
Yes, I do.
Stephen just posted a ad from 2000 or something. No, longer ago than that. With George was in a comedy bill at the Queen's Hall. I didn't even know George did stand up and stuff. He was in a show called Reanimator the Musical here about 10 years ago with us, and he was really funny in that. But
I
didn't know.
Did you produce
him.
That?
Yeah.
That's a great.
Wasn't it
that
good?
That
was
great, man.
I was really, I loved that show.
You even got some of the good stuff from the film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So George was, you know, whatever character he plays, I don't remember the characters. But I didn't know he was a stand-up. I mean, I know him from Cheers, obviously.
Well, he was an improviser. I think that era of the 60s and 70s was a sort of a permeable between stand-up and improv. I mean, right. The remnants of that were around in San Francisco because Greg was in stand-up. I'm an actor who looks funny. And then we got into a group and started doing improv.
You know, Wayne?
Where does, like, obviously I wasn't there, but where does, like, Steve Martin or someone, where does that fit in with that time and that genres or whatever, you know what I mean? Because he was selling out, that crazy stadiums. Is that when comedy
Good
started
point.
Getting stadiums?
The point you're making is exactly what Steve Martin grabbed, because his act, the comedy clubs weren't completely buying it then. It was still like, you know, sort of Buddy Hackett.
Silly,
like,
prop comedy.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I'm talking about my wife. It was still that era, almost like the Northern sure. comic.
Take my wife,
and,
please.
And he went, I can't get booked. And so he started on writing for the Smothers Brothers show. Mm. And then this was a left-wing, somewhat progressive rock and roll folk music show. And when that got canceled, he went, I want to go. They said, well, why don't you go on tour and do something? Like, where am I going to go on tour? Go to the colleges and watch our show. And he started playing the colleges, and the college audiences were crazy. I saw, he's the first stand-up I ever saw. I was going to join the Army, and I went on a date with Mary Lou Kelly, and she had like a 1938 Pontiac, and we saw the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Oh my God!
Wow. Messina, and the opening act was Steve Martin.
Oh my Lord!
Mm. And I was like, what the hell is this? And then we drove around all night and we tried to make out. We realized she's gay. I wasn't gonna push it. And she was like, oh, cool, man. You know, we had some of those moments where we're going, this is great. I'm hating to leave now, because I'm actually starting to find people I like in this state. But I signed up and I was gone. Right. But
so you did go in the Army after?
Yes, 73 to 76.
Well, I'm glad you made it.
Vietnam era. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I just
missed it myself.
But I had to do the draft thing.
Yes, my brothers did, but I missed it.
But, you know, so I saw Steve Martin. I was like, I'd never seen it. I never seen this flood of creativity and that sort of the swagger, the jokey swagger he had, and his timing, because he would do the whole thing and go, I'm available for bar mitzvahs. And, you know, bring the audience down. It was like, great. It wasn't stoner comedy, but because you were stoner, it was even more ludicrous and absurd.
Yeah, that thing where you're just watching something, you know, you're sort of like, sort of drawn to it, sort of kinetically drawn to it. It's like a magnet. You don't know what's going on. Why is this? What is this? Yes. And it's nice.
A piece of art or piece of performance, yeah, you see, yeah. You go, you don't go, oh, this is the new thing. But you go, okay, I'm seeing things I
know. What this is, but there's something. And then it's that kind of, it's joyful, but also a little melancholic when you start doing it yourself and you start understanding the cogs and how it works.
Right.
And then you watch people you love and you go, oh, okay. And it's that thing where I'm watching things now, and comedy-wise, I can kind of see it on a page. It's not that it takes the joy out of it. It's like, because for normal people, for, like, I don't know, for people who don't do comedy, well, yeah, normal people who aren't
that covers it all.
Yes, they watch comedy or maybe music or something, and it's like a sort of like magic trick. It's superpower. I don't know what's going on. How can you get up and just stand there and make it up? Like when I was 14, watching Live at the Apollo. I saw, like, Russell Howard was on Live at the Apollo, but my brother's birthday, we went to see Russell Howard on tour. And then, so I'd seen him on tour, and he was on Live at the Apollo, and he was saying the same things he said on tour. And I was like, wait, what? But he said that on the tour, so what's he doing on set? And he's, like, acting surprised at this extra bit of punchline he did. Oh, I just made that, oh. I'm like, but he did that on the tour, so he hadn't made that up before. So I was like, this is, okay.
You got the veil, you pulled away the veil.
Wait a minute. And so, yeah, so it's that thing, people just think, oh, I don't know how you do it, go up on stage. It's like, well, I'm just 28 pages an hour, so learn it, you do it again.
Part of your job is to make it turn around like it's somewhat happening at the same, at that time only.
Exactly. So it's pretty dynamic. Crazy. That's the thing. So you were saying that Steve Martin then selling out stadiums.
Later on. And, of course, anybody who's got money in Hollywood went, brr.
Yeah.
You know, there it is. You know, there's the act. But he just went a route that nobody, Buddy Hackett, Don Rickles, they weren't going to play colleges. They're playing Caesars.
Do you think that something like stand-up comedy should be, not should in a moral way, you don't think it loses something by being played to a stadium?
I think because his was, now the stadium, I say, college campuses, so the big college campuses. Mm. I don't think he ever went to the low where he's playing Wembley, mm-hmm. like Badil and Newman did. Because there were a lot of British comics were just incensed that they did that and question it. And rightfully, when he gets a certain size,
and broadened and dumbed down. I don't know. I think that I'm not an expert on Steve Martin, really, but like just the footage I've seen of Steve Martin doing massive, like massive stadiums, like the American public who are losing their minds. It is still like quintessentially like original and good, and like he's being himself and got like a fucking arrow through his head.
Right.
You know, and yeah, so you can do it well. I think that's the thing. I'm fascinated. Like Michael McIntyre is a good comedian.
Yes,
and he
is.
Has material. I watched he did like a Netflix special. It was filmed at the Palladium, and yeah, it's material. It's 8 minutes on getting into a hot bath. It's like, you know, 5 minutes on choosing a new password. It's all there. It's bang bang bang. But yeah, it's a bit broad for my taste. And halfway through, I am sort of like going, hey, he's still sort of talking about these sort of mundane things about, and it all ties together at the end. It's sort of rigorously plotted and stuff. So it's not bad. It's just plain to people who's a bit broad. So I don't know. But then also, as you say, like with the whole, you know, people coming together on Fringe and making, you know, tens and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds because they can.
As long as its construction is viable, its rhetorical construction as comedy is viable, and maybe it's not exploring anything, you can go, okay, it's good.
Yeah, it's entertaining.
He's exploring normality.
Yeah.
Now,
it's not bad. It's really
not bad. If you're on a Fringe or whatever, that's fantastic. And I love me an edgy comic. Yeah. But what McIntyre does is like magic.
It is like magic.
Because he makes huge, huge, huge laughs out of pretty much nothing. You know, the man drawer, the things that nobody thinks of because they're so little, they're so normal, they're so nothing.
Mm.
And he makes laughs out of that.
Chapters into that. Yeah. Explore and line up and accelerate.
And because that touches kind of everybody. I mean, I remember
have seen him in the early days or something, right?
Darling, my five stars. He would not be where he
how
was
fun.
Today.
I love that kind of stories. Like, no, you've seen Steve
Star
Martin on
Maker.
Oh, yeah.
Star Maker. We've had you on a lesbian date to see Steve Martin. Mm-hmm. We've had you making Michael McIntyre's career. And mine, maybe, darling, with your five a few days ago.
I know. It would have been a six if I'd had six to give. It was fabulous.
I'm gonna make out after this.
But not quite my type.
All right. It should be with Mary Lou. What was your lesbian name?
Mary Lou Kelly.
Mary Lou Kelly.
Good Irish lesbian.
Yeah. Irish? Oh, great. Well, so, Kelly, listen, now...
Like Sissy Spacek. She had that real fresh-faced lesbian thing going.
An impression.
Oh, I like that.
Mary Lou, please.
I don't know if I want to kiss you. I mean, I kiss you, but like a friend. But I don't think we're suited. By suited, you mean... Because I'm 18.
Yeah.
What do you mean? It's not because you're fat. I just think I like something else. And so, okay, cool. Let's get a hamburger.
Yeah.
It was really this is 1970.
No, it's hysterical.
The question would be, so is a blowjob out of the question?
Yeah, exactly.
You dance?
Oh, you charming bastards.
No. It's wonderful. Glasgow cut to the fucking cheese. Yes, nothing like a Ouija.
Yeah.
When I came out of one of the shows he did here when he was like nobody, and I was like, God, and I was sore from laughing.
Oh,
and this was a guy who.
When is this early noughties? He's not exploded 2006 or seven. Or something.
Yeah,
7, 8.
And halfway through his run, people were planning. They were waiting downstairs to come into his gig late. Because it was just such a wonderful, joyful, hilarious experience. Because he was in the Pleasance below, so if you came in late, you had to basically walk across the stage.
Uh-huh.
And people just wanted to have him mention them and talk to them. And so it wasn't like people going, oh God, please don't pick on me. He didn't pick.
Well, he's charming, he's lovely, he's gorgeous.
Yeah. And I came out of the show I saw there. And it was just thinking, this is something extraordinary.
Yeah.
And there was a group of comics. I'm not going to name them.
Oh.
In the Pleasance courtyard.
They're using AI to write reviews.
I know, right?
I know.
Doing this again.
I know.
I won't name them. But
one of these comics said, oh, so who have you been to see? Oh, Michael McIntyre. And he went, the trouble with Michael is he's just funny.
Really, okay. That's what he said.
That's genuinely what he said.
Okay. Yeah, that's terrible for a comedian. Okay,
well, that nails it, though. I love sort of your little lines like that. Your little, sort of Simon Amstel a few days ago doing Work in Progress at the Grand. And it's that thing of he can...
Work in Progress at the Grand.
What the fuck?
Yeah, hello.
Anyway,
you're going to rehearse your shit, don't do it in an 800-seater
anyway,
with everybody...
Simon Amstel hate fest over here. Anyway, sorry. Nice time. But no, it was he does a very nice thing now.
I love Simon Amstel.
But not nice thing now, and generally. And that he can just say very short things that are truthful. And he goes, you know what? I've realised I just enjoy slowly lowering myself onto a slippery dick.
Nice. Now, I feel that probably hysterical. A lot of people could relate to
I know.
That.
It's just so hysterical that, well, yeah, if you just say Michael McIntyre, he's just funny. It's just sort of, it was very simple, but it's very truthful. It's still hysterical.
Jason Byrne's not a... I love him. He makes me laugh. Yeah. He's not cutting edge. He's not... But he's just a...
Jim Gaffigan.
Jim's a very funny guy.
No blue, no nothing. Talks about family and
stuff.
He just
makes me laugh. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Do a musical about a boy wearing a skirt sort of satirizing the state of queer media and culture, though.
I did not know the theme.
Gaffigan did
this again?
Well, I do that, so...
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
well, no, but he does not do that.
Oh, right. No, I don't think so. He talks about Hot Pockets. That's his thing. He's a big...
Back to
Hot Pockets for everyone.
We're about to get chucked out.
What?
Aren't we?
What?
I know. Right. It's 5 to midnight, the witching hour.
Christ on a crutch.
I know. This is when Simon turns into a small, fat,
feral
75-year-old straight man.
75-year-old
Get me a lager,
man.
Stat.
So this is where we go around the table, and everyone gets to promote their show in the best way they can. No AI.
Mm.
Yeah, this has to come from you. I don't want you reading off your fucking phone. before we're taken over by computers. Simon.
Hey. Simon David, Dead Dad Show. You get 8 different shows in one, trying to win every award there is. And then my dad does a show at the end. So it's a laugh, single tier at the end. Mm. Just one, though. Keep it light for Edinburgh.
And where and when?
It's at Underbelly Bristow Square at 8:15 p.m. until the 27th of August.
Does it have any reviews?
It does. It actually has 5 stars from this up-and-coming reviewer for The Scotsman. Don't know the name. Mm.
Who cares?
You know, I think it was written by AI.
Mike McShay.
Well, let me get this on. I got my chat.
Yeah.
I got my chat GBH. Let's go ahead. Here we go. Hello, Kate. This is a review for Mike McShane's show, Paul Merton's Impro Chums, 3:30, Pleasance Grand, a panoply of improvisational genius done with a light cream touch, finished with a basil sauce and a dead baby on a spinner. Thank you.
You wouldn't be able to tell. Thank you. That's scary. That's spooky.
I know. I want a ticket for that.
I'd go see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that, do you feel... you just want to talk about the prof, or do you want to go through your list? Go on, go through your list.
Do the roster.
I know, and this is... He's an important guy.
I'm not an important guy.
We're doing it in the style of Michael McIntyre.
Yeah, I don't know. Wow, that'd have to be funny.
You need
funny,
to be running back and forth the entire room.
So we have a few shows, very quickly, Breed or Bust, about reproductive rights at Paterhouse at 2:20.
Paterhouse. That's good.
Better? Hoos?
Right, okay, start again. Hoos. Shake two.
All right. Breeder Bus about reproductive rights at Petter Hoos.
Nice.
Corey Room, 2:20. Got very nice reviews. Then we have Impact, which is actually a lovely show about the Lockerbie bombing. And it's it's uplifting.
Doesn't sound like fun.
No, it is, though. I mean, it's uplifting. It's very poignant about the tragedy because she went to Syracuse and some of the students from Syracuse were on the plane with music, beautiful music. She's a Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter that's now doing this play. Poof, that you met Celeste the other night, about a fairy in who's going to save the world and
And Celeste, they started the Trevor Project.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hero.
Yeah,
heroine.
He wrote the short film Trevor that the Trevor Project came out of. And then we have a show called Four, a play with music at Gilded Blue. He's looking at his watch. I better hurry this up.
Yep.
Mystery House. And Sherlock Holmes. You know, Nigel's doing an amazing Sherlock here at the Surgeon's Hall.
Great reviews.
Dorothy Parker, also a great 3-5-star reviews. Blood and the Lambs, probably the best reviewed. Has 5 5-star reviews so far.
Whoa.
I know. Mm-hmm. And it's about abortion rights and the criminalization of abortion in Texas. It's a Kafkaesque two-hander about this woman who's trapped in a Texas bureaucracy about abortion. And then there's If Truth Be Told, which is only 3 days in the Free Fringe, but she's a storyteller, a comedian. And then we have Adele, a tribute show, Elvis tribute show, all in Le Monde. And then there's this freaking idiot
I've heard there's some...
Some guy.
Filthy.
Yeah, you know, some pervert.
Potty-mouthed pervert.
It is all of those
aging
things.
Aging twink. Yes.
That's right. Exactly. I've not been called that in 10 years. and that's called Shagadelic, the origins of slang words for doing it. That opened today, and it goes through the 27th. It's at the Hanover Tap at 3:45 p.m.
How was your big opening?
Fucking awesome. It was 11 on a 1 to 10. It was full, and they loved it. They laughed. People coming up. It was fantastic.
So you did get that classic thing, a warm hand on your opening.
Yes, I couldn't have been happier about
it. Gushing. Darling.
Yes, it was wonderful. And I'm just now prepared for tomorrow when there will be two people staring at me for an hour. Because I know
be
it happens.
Opening again.
Yes.
I thought you said Michael McIntyre would show up.
Yeah, that's going to happen. You said, I know your dad's not even dead, so I don't know.
Yeah. It's all an illusion. Marvelous. Yes, well, there's going to be more where we let off. Where we let off, where we...
Let off steam.
Where do you let off?
I don't... Someone's let off.
I know, where we have ended tonight. Don't know when... Well, our technical guru, Stephen, will be getting it up online.
You're hearing.
That's right, baby.
And then 24 to 48 hours.
God, that's quite a long time to get it up.
That's a very young cheese.
But I think it's definitely worth it once it's up.
I might not be any good, but I am quick.
Somebody asked me how many listeners. I just said 1 million because I didn't
That's
know any
good.
Better.
No, 1 million.
Yeah.
I know. We'd be better off on TikTok, but we'd have had to do this in 2 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, honey, 5 seconds.
Yeah.